You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Good afternoon. You're listening to KYRS. You're also listening to Praxis. I'm your host, Taylor, and I am here in the studio with an awesome organizer here in town. We're going to talk about an issue that has come up on the show before, but we're going to go into a little more depth regarding what's been going on here in Spokane, Washington, at our intermodal station, aka the Amtrak station, Greyhound station, etc. So I'm here with Jennifer Mesa.
Hi.
And do you just want to start? And I'll tell listeners, we will be joined later in the hour by Councilperson Brian Beggs, who helped put together the ordinance that was passed in the city a while ago regarding Border Patrol at the Intermodal Center and elsewhere. But for now, it's just the two of us. Do you want to start by just talking a little bit about who you are, what your role is, and all this work?
So hi, everyone. My name is Jennifer Mesa, and I am a volunteer with the Spokane Immigrants' Rights Coalition. And I also administer a group, which will soon be organization, is Latinos in Spokane. And my work with the intermodal station started earlier in the year when I was asked to be part of a panel with ACLU, the Flights and Rights workshop or panel that they do here in Spokane, the first one that they did here in Spokane. And in this panel was representative from Gonzaga and Council President Ben Stuckert, and we had an immigration attorney, which I can't remember their name right now, but we were discussing immigration, our community here in Spokane, and we received a lot of questions about the intermodal station, since there's been so many arrests there over the past 5 years. Mm-hmm. We discussed the issue of the Greyhound station, and I was also communicating that, you know, not all the arrests by Border Patrol and ICE occur at the station. A lot of them occur within our community, within Spokane Valley. So after this panel, the panelists continued to email, you know, we interacted face-to-face to see what solutions we could come up with. And we knew that it was a long-term project to address this issue of, Border Patrol and their warrantless searches, you know, they're targeting specifically Latinos. So if you are a person of color, if you have an accent, then you will be targeted by ICE, Border Patrol at the Greyhound station. So from there, we got together with ACLU, and we decided that we were going to start having people in the station, because if, I don't know if you've ever been, well, you've been there, Taylor.
but for listeners, yeah.
Yes, it's not the greatest place in Spokane. It's kind of isolated. It's dark, you know, it's not a very welcoming space. And riders that come in from out of town, they're sometimes confused about what other buses to take, need to ask questions. So we decided that the best effort that we could do, Gonzaga representative and the ACLU, we decided to get some volunteers on the ground to hand out the Know Your Rights cards. So we did a training on Know Your Rights for these volunteers, and then we started filling shifts, multiple shifts during the week, so we can talk one-on-one with riders and let them know of their rights and what's occurring here in Spokane.
Yeah, and again, for folks who haven't been there, the intermodal station here downtown is it's a little bit out of the way. It's on the east end of downtown, but if you're going to travel by rail or bus anywhere in the northern part of the country through to the west coast, you're pretty much going to come through Spokane.
Yes.
So it's pretty significant that, you know, this is and a lot of people, correct me if I'm wrong, who are undocumented or who just have fewer resources in general are more likely to be taking the bus than, say, flying.
Yes. So it targets low income riders. And our community members from cities that surround Spokane, where there is more of immigrant presence. So immigrants that are working in the agriculture fields or from Central Washington or connecting from one bus to another here in Spokane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with this effort to get the word out to riders, what were some of the, and I guess I could share mine too, but what were some of the volunteer experiences and what was your experience kind of talking to riders? Because you're distributing the information to everyone,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
Not just people who seem like they might be targeted.
Exactly. So we wanted to get this information to all riders to let them know of their rights, what to do in case they are asked for their papers for where they were born, just basically to not respond because they have the right to remain silent. And my experience there with volunteers and with speaking to riders has always been very positive. I get a lot of questions in Spanish from riders that are coming in and out of Spokane. Yeah, we've had a little bit of negative encounters with some of the employees there because they think that we're soliciting, which we're not. But overall, it's been a positive. You know, let's just look out for each other. These are your rights in case Border Patrol agents do board the bus. This is what you can do. This is how you can help others on your ride. And just keep this information with you and share it to others.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that, I mean, know your rights information in general is crucial to have because so many people don't know. And in the situation we're talking about, when Border Patrol has been boarding these buses, it's multiple armed federal agents, sometimes with dogs, coming onto a bus and kind of randomly demanding, as you said, to know where people are born, to see documentation. What are people's rights in that situation?
The most important right that we want to communicate to riders is you have the right to remain silent, because if everything that you say and you share with an agent can be used against you. So if you have an accent and then you start speaking, you can be targeted. So the one thing we want to say is we have the right to remain silent, and you can answer yes, no questions. But unless there is a warrant, unless there is a specific reason why they're asking a rider, they really don't have to provide any answers, especially about where they were born and where are you from, how long have you been in the U.S. I think these are questions that I wouldn't want to answer, and I find it unnecessary for riders. We want Spokane to be a welcoming place. We want people to feel free to come in and out of the city without having to answer all these questions and be targeted. But yes, typically how these agents operate is there'll be three that go towards the bus. One of them enters the bus. They ask for, they target the people they're going to ask for their papers. They ask them where they're born, how long they've been in the U.S. Another one blocks sort of the entrance, exit and entrance of the bus. And then there's another one that waits outside with a dog. So if you can imagine, a bus is an enclosed area. You're filled with other people. It's pretty uncomfortable. And it's intimidating to see these people come in, they're armed and, demanding to know this information about you. I think it's a very scary feeling. I personally don't ride the bus for these reasons, and I warn my family not to.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess we can start to talk before Councilman Beggs gets here about this idea of the ordinance, kind of how that emerged and what's happened with trying to take a legal strategy to combat this invasive problem.
Yes. So throughout the last, 6 months, we've had amazing community organizers that have come together to address this issue. And some of them are Planned Parenthood, Center for Justice, HBPA, NAACP. The list goes on. The Washington Immigrant Solidarity Network. They've all come together to see how, what is it that we would like to communicate to the city, and how we would want to this ordinance to go through, and what we want to communicate from riders.
Yeah, and so that ended up being, when was that vote? At the middle of October?
Yes.
Yeah. the city passed 6-1 this ordinance, effectively banning Border Patrol and ICE from non-public areas in the city. And I guess we should say the Intermodal Center is city property.
Yes.
The city owns that building. Mm-hmm. So that was a victory. There was a lot of really compelling testimony that night from people, like you said, people who say, I tell my family not to travel on the bus now. I know a lot of people who won't come to Spokane at all. A bunch of people didn't come to Hoop Fest this year was like a example that kind of stuck with me.
Yes.
Because there's this atmosphere of fear in our city. Mm-hmm. So it passed 6-1. And what's happened since then?
So since then, the mayor was not in favor and he vetoed the ordinance. So I think right now we're just waiting to see what the next steps will be. And we are talking as a community, as all these different organizations that are involved. But right now, I don't think I have a specific answer. So what's the next step? I think Councilman Breanne Beggs would be better to answer that. Okay. However, what we have seen as far as the community, we have seen an increase in Border Patrol presence there. Just this week, we've had several arrests. And these arrests continue to occur. And it doesn't affect everybody in the city of Spokane, but it definitely represents us. So I think everybody should really focus on what is it that we want from our city and what are we communicating to people that are coming in and out of our city.
Mm-hmm. And when people are being arrested, is their charge, are they being arrested specifically for not having documentation of their citizenship on their person?
Yes. So if you don't have your documentation, then you can be pulled off the bus. Because they have their probable cause. And then from there, they can investigate further if you are undocumented or if your visa has expired or any other reason, they'll arrest. We have had cases where the people that were arrested were actual citizens, but they didn't have proof of how to demonstrate that at the moment. Not everybody travels with their green card or with their passport.
Mm-hmm.
We've had other victories with our volunteer effort. For example, I was at a gathering the other day and a friend of mine shared that her brother was traveling from, from Central Washington. And Border Patrol agents, they were traveling to Central Washington, and Border Patrol agents boarded the bus and they started asking everybody for their documents. And there was a student who had assisted a Know Your Rights and knew of our efforts. And they stood up and said, everybody has the right to remain silent. You don't have to comply with anything that they're requesting unless they have a warrant. And, at that moment, that made a huge impact for the people that were there. Somebody took leadership in saying, we're safe. We don't have to abide by these, warrantless searches and, by being targeted just because of the color of our skin or the strength of our accent.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that, because the majority of people riding the bus when I was there, were like not Latinx, not Spanish speaking, not like what people who might be targeted as being perceived to be undocumented. And those are the people that I was focusing on a lot to say, hey, you can make a difference in this situation because you're a lot less vulnerable mm-hmm. to stand up and say, if you want to be an ally, everyone wants to be an ally mm-hmm. right now, something you can actually do. I had a good experience of passing out the information there and someone already had a stack of them.
Awesome.
In their pocket. So good job organizing that effort, I guess.
Thank you for your work there.
Yeah. So I know at least one person, the story I primarily know is Juan Santos Bonilla, who ended up being deported after being arrested on the bus in Spokane. Mm-hmm. Is his the only case of that happening?
I'm not positive. We see a lot of cases that come in or arrests. I have not kept track of all of them. But what I would like to highlight is that whether it's one arrest or or one deportation, it really affects families. There are situations where there are people that are in the process of getting their paperwork, their immigration paperwork through the immigration processes. Sorry, not finding words to say all these mm-hmm. immigration documents. And these processes take forever. I'm not a citizen. I have been in the country, in and out of the country since I was 4 or 5. And I am just now in the process of obtaining my citizenship. So these things take 10, 20, 30 years. It's not something that we can find a easy solution. And it all depends on the time that you enter the country, if you have family that are citizens, your country of origin. There's just so many different complexities to immigration. So when we have somebody that is arrested, we don't know if they're undocumented, how long they've been in the country. We don't have all those details, so it's difficult to define. What we do know is that when a person is arrested, that is somebody's family member. That could be the primary caregiver to somebody. That's somebody's brother, sister, mother, father. And their families are separated, and their families are going to be impacted. And I think that as community members, these are our neighbors, and we should really care about how they're being treated. One of the most recent arrests, I can't provide a lot of information, but it reached my heart because this person was an agriculture worker who had worked in the state in the fields for over 30 years. And they've paid their taxes. They've been outstanding citizens. They're just a good person. I got to speak with some of the relatives. And, you know, after working in the fields for 30 years and being arrested for, you know, just being racially profiled, to me, it's really heartbreaking because this is somebody that's serving us directly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this whole state, I mean, I feel like that's like the backbone of so much of our state's economy, especially in a rural area.
Yeah.
And that's,
it's unfair. It's unjust. And we should be treating our workers and our community members a lot better than this.
Mm-hmm. And also with you talking about the fact that this process takes so long, I think there's this narrative going on right now in the media and in kind of mainstream political sphere that there's this distinction between people who are, quote, immigrating the right way and people who are doing it the wrong way, and things like seeking asylum are being included in the wrong way mm-hmm. right now. But I think people don't understand that the right way is a convoluted, difficult process, right?
I don't think there is a right way.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think the only way that it's a right way is if you maybe are a millionaire from if you are maybe from a European nation with a strong family background, then it will be a lot easier for you versus if you're from Colombia or Mexico
mm-hmm.
or, you know, Asia or any other country. But we see who gets residencies quicker than others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there is no right way. There's not a simple path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Praxis on KYRS. I'm talking with Jennifer Mesa about the efforts to push back against Border Patrol's warrantless searches on buses and also trains, but primarily buses here in Spokane at the Intermodal Center. So I guess just from a legal perspective, it seems so when you describe what's happening, you know, your description earlier of the three agents getting on the bus, demanding to see papers. I think it feels wrong to people on their gut level. But just from a legal perspective, like how are they allowed to do that legally?
I think it's I can't refer or talk about the law. I'm not an attorney, but I would say that if there's collaboration with the city employees, in this case with Greyhound employees, then there's a lot that you can get away with because they're accessing an unrestricted area that is city-owned property. So if there's collaboration there, which we know there is, then they can get away with a lot. I believe that it shouldn't be allowed for them to block an entrance to a bus, especially in that manner. But it's an ongoing effort to bring attention to what's going on, and to define the details of what's legal, and what we can do to get Border Patrol to be out of that intermodal area, mm-hmm. intermodal station that is city-owned property, and also what we can do here as a community to help our community members that are undocumented, or also in the process of working out their, I don't like to say legal or immigration mm-hmm. status. It's something that takes a long time. And specifically in the Latinx community, we are, we're made up of families that are mixed status. So I could have citizenship, but I can have a relative that's undocumented that's living under the same roof. I mean, that's the majority of the community. So yeah, there's a lot of work to do there to keep our community members safe.
Mm-hmm. And as you were saying earlier, until we figure this out, until we figure out enforcement, since the mayor is kind of refusing to enforce this ordinance that was passed, is the community in general, I guess, just kind of encouraging folks not to come through here?
As far as what we're recommending from other community members of the Latinx community, I'd like to say within the group that I work with, we're recommending folks to not travel through the intermodal station, to not travel through bus, and to be alert when they come into Spokane County specifically. We know of collaborations between the city of Spokane Valley and ICE agents. There have been several arrests of ICE that they, you know, enter homes and they'll take everybody in the home and arrest everybody. So it's not a really safe situation, specifically at the intermodal station. So yeah, we advise people not to travel there.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that people can do who want to show solidarity beyond just spreading the word and trying to be aware and keep an eye out for their neighbors?
Yes, I definitely recommend reaching out to all the amazing organizations that we've been working with, from Center for Justice, ACLU, Planned Parenthood, RAIS, the Hispanic Business Association, the organization that we're developing, Latinos in Spokane. And there's many opportunities to work with the immigrant community and work and volunteer there at the station.
Cool. Well, thank you. And we'll talk more about that in a bit. We've just been joined by Councilperson Brian Beggs, and to talk a little bit more about what's happened here in the city in regards to Border Patrol. Border Patrol's presence in the city of Spokane. So hi, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. Yeah. Good to be with you.
Do you want to just, I guess, introduce yourself a little bit and talk about what your role has been in this
sure.
effort?
So I'm always happy to be on KYRS. I spent a lot of years working in this building, directing Center for Justice, and really working on issues of marginalized population in the past. I'm a lawyer by trade, and a couple of years ago I was appointed to the Spokane City Council, and I ran last year for election, and I'm in the middle of a four-year term. But complaints about Border Patrol action at the Intermodal, which is a city-owned building, have been going on for a couple years now. Actually, it's been going on all through the Obama administration. I mean, people try to make this somehow this is the Trump administration, but it's been a problem for mm-hmm. years and years. It only came to light, at least to my knowledge, more recently. And here's the challenge. So the Intermodal is owned by the city, but we rent it to Greyhound. And they in turn rent it to some other bus lines. And essentially, people are coming through Spokane on I-90, which is an east-west highway. But the Border Patrol for several years has been meeting the bus, and they meet the bus in a part of the station that is not open to the public. And before people get off the bus, they go onto the bus with several agents with firearms, and they put one person at the front of the bus and other people at the back, and they come forward and they ask people questions. And what they don't tell you is that you don't have to answer the questions. You're technically not detained. Mm-hmm. But when someone's standing over you with a firearm and asking you questions, typically the human response is to answer, especially when it doesn't look like there's a way out at the front, even though they would tell you that if you actually wanted to push past them, they would let you go. So we got concerned about that. It's really not the kind of city that we want to be. We consider ourselves a welcoming city, the city of choice, a city of compassion. And what we found out is that they were literally interrogating thousands of people every month who had to experience that. And then one or two per month, they were pulling off a bus and taken over to a detention facility in Tacoma. So it seemed like a lot of effort and a lot of interrogation for not much result, and very out of place. We're not near a border. So we went to them and said, "Will you stop doing this?" And they said, "No, we're going to keep doing it." And they said a law that says if they're within 100 air nautical miles of the border, they can stop any vehicle in question. Mm-hmm. And but we found out that's not actually so true. That's a law that they made up, the Border Patrol made up. Congress didn't say that. Congress said Border Patrol can stop vehicles within a reasonable distance of the border. And the reason they use that kind of looser term is that some border stations are literally right on the border. Others are a few miles inland from it. And so Congress wanted to give that flexibility that if people were literally crossing the Border Patrol could stop their vehicle without suspicion, without a warrant, which typically is required in the United States. You have to have a warrant or suspicion. But so they made up this rule 100 miles, and that's nowhere in the statute. And actually, I just learned recently, in 1975, the U.S. Supreme Court said that's not a true interpretation of the law. They said if you're patrolling an east-west highway without a warrant or suspicion, that's not acceptable to stop that vehicle. They have to be crossing the border. Hmm. And that was, you know, that's been the law for 40 years. No case has undone that. And we've been working with the ACLU and some other organizations hoping they'll kind of bring that forward.
Well, and Spokane, Washington, I've been thinking about this the whole time, and you finally explained it to me during the city council hearing. Because it's a stretch for Spokane, Washington to even be 100 air nautical miles from the border. Right. It's 97. There's no road that can get you to Canada in 100 miles driving from Spokane, Washington. Mm-hmm. And the east-west point just kind of underlines it further. And it's a slippery slope, I feel, for the Border Patrol to be able to say, well, the border zone's 100 miles. Right. What's to stop it from becoming 500 miles next year, and then suddenly the whole nation is one big border zone.
It is. I mean, frankly, in their interpretation, it is most of the population of the United States. And what it means in their interpretation is you have no Fourth Amendment right. And that, you know, we have these constitutional rights, and they're there for a reason. Sure, it's a little inconvenient sometimes for law enforcement, you know, things having to get a warrant, having to have a reasonable suspicion, but it protects all of us. And we learned long ago when we were oppressed by Great Britain that having individual rights that can curtail government overreach is better for everyone. Even if somebody gets away with some contraband, it's better that the rest of us are not running in fear of our government. And their interpretation just extends that kind of fear and interrogation really unduly. And as you're right, this isn't a border town by any stretch of the imagination. And maybe if the bus was coming from Canada to the Spokane, but they're not. Mm-hmm. And frankly, you know, when I spoke with the Border Patrol supervisor, they acknowledged that they were profiling and that they were just using that opportunity really as a show of force. And that's all this really is. Again, there's not a whole bunch of undocumented people coming through our bus station. It's just a show of force. And that's exactly what our Constitution is supposed to protect us. And we as a city have said we're going to do our best. But just to be clear, you know, our police officers are not going to arrest the Border Patrol when they come. You know, we're not provoking a conflict. But what we really wanted to make it clear was one of the exceptions to getting a warrant is if you give consent. And we were afraid that Border Patrol would argue that they had consent from the city because our police were sort of, you know, not getting in their way. And so mostly what our law did, just practically speaking, is we made it crystal clear in writing that we do not give consent. They do not have permission. And that way, if they're in court and someone's suing them, which I imagine these people who are now being pulled off these buses, they will be suing the Border Patrol mm-hmm. and saying, you violated my constitutional rights, according to the Supreme Court decision, which was Almeida Sanchez versus the United States. And you owe me money for violating my rights, or anyone else that's been questioned and wasn't pulled off a bus. They could be suing the Border Patrol, and they will not be able to say, oh, but we have permission. So we've really sort of given tools to people to hold them accountable. And I'm confident that they will be held accountable. City council is not allowed to hire lawyers for the city. So we can't get the city to sue. And the mayor has said he's not interested in doing so at this time.
And he's got a year left in office.
Yep.
So a little over a year.
Yep.
There's probably some folks listening who have the exact day count, but I'm not one of them. I was going to ask, so now that the city law is on the books, people have those grounds to sue. What is stopping people from suing or pursuing just the blatant Fourth Amendment violation of it all?
Nothing other than needing a lawyer. So, you know, that's the thing. I tell people it's great to have constitutional rights, civil rights, but they're sort of only as good as the lawyer you have to help you, because it's very hard to walk into court and sue the United States. So that's really, in order to really have rights, you have to have a lawyer. And fortunately, there's some organizations. There's the Northwest Immigrant Rights Project that really helps folks that are in detention in Tacoma. There's the ACLU. There is the Center for Justice here in this building. There's other places and other groups that are looking at it. But, you know, the legal system, the court system takes a while. So people are essentially looking at this law. They're collecting people who have been bothered or impacted by this law. So that I really encourage anyone who has been, if they've been questioned, whether they were pulled off a bus or not, if they were simply even questioned, they can contact these groups. And my sense is that they'll get a very good fact pattern and they'll go to court. And unless the Supreme Court completely changes up what it did previously, the Border Patrol will be held liable.
And so just in terms of Spokane, you know, we passed this ordinance 6-1, the council, which is a veto proof majority with the way our system's set up here. Mm-hmm. The mayor has basically just said that he's declining to enforce it. What recourse is there from that point? I mean, is there any way to like compel the mayor to enforce the law, for instance?
Yeah. So that's unclear at the moment. And you know, I'm a lawyer and I'm still telling you it's unclear. I don't know. And we're looking into that. What can we do when the, you know, and it wasn't just a 6-1 vote. It was also, I think we had 67 people testify, 65 mm-hmm. people testified in favor of it. We've got countless emails, phone calls in favor of this, of keeping the federal government out of our bus station when they're really not accomplishing anything and wasting a lot of money. So how do you do that? I don't know. But potentially either someone on the council or a private citizen who's paying taxes in the city could go to court and compel the mayor and the city to do it. But frankly, the shortest distance between two points is if they were going to do that anyway, they might as well just sue the Border Patrol. So we put language specifically in there that said it was our intent as a city that anyone whose rights were violated, including simply a resident of the city that didn't want its property being used that way or a traveler, they had the right to go to court on behalf of the city to enforce it. So really, that's really what should happen is once someone who's had their rights violated and can get an attorney, they should just directly go against the government, the federal government.
So I was part of one of the organizations that was collaborating on the ordinance, and I think it sounds great to have the opportunity to be able to sue Border Patrol. It sounds really awesome. But the majority of the families that are being arrested are low-income families, mm-hmm. and they're really just trying to put out the day-to-day fires. Mm-hmm. So what can we do as far as getting Border Patrol out of that unrestricted area, that restricted area?
Yeah, I mean, so legally, right now, there's, you know, I would say a dispute between the federal government and the city government. And the mm-hmm. federal government tends to win those in term until a judge rules. And I think this battle is going to be won or lost mm-hmm. in front of a judge. I will say, though, that there are people who are in detention now who were picked up at our intermodal center who have little or nothing to lose. So, first of all, I totally agree with you. Anyone who has any questions about their documentation is not going to want to bring a suit themselves, for sure. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't. They're too vulnerable. Mm-hmm. But the people who are already in detention have not much to lose. And frankly, there's even potential. I've used this in the past for a few people who are undocumented and who were illegally imprisoned, was able to then get that reversed and then make the basis for a U visa, I think it is, a victim of crime because they've been sort of illegally mm-hmm. Imprisoned. Mm-hmm. So for people who are in detention, that's a more likely thing. And I've shared with the lawyers at Northwest Immigrant Rights Project mm-hmm. That, and they know about the law, they've been watching it, that so they're going to use that. But again, there's just kind of a lag time that's really frustrating to your average person of like, come on, the law's passed. It's mm-hmm. you're telling me the Supreme Court already ruled in our favor. You know, but really, it's going to be, months, if not years, to win that battle eventually. Because even if you win at the trial court, it's going to go to the Court of Appeals. It might go to the U.S. Supreme Court. But it's important, and I really, really appreciate the work that you did and other groups to stand up for the rule of law and the Constitution in our country and these principles. It really... We don't get anywhere unless people are willing to do that. So mm-hmm. people who are less vulnerable, like I'm assuming yourself, I don't know your whole history, mm-hmm. but did stand up. All kinds of people, really. All races, genders, ages, economic standing. They stood up and said, this is wrong. And even though it may take us several years to win the final court battle, that's so important mm-hmm. In these times to just... And again, there's nothing more righteous than standing to me on the Constitution. It's not a left-wing thing. It's totally principled based on Spokane values, Washington State values, United States values, and really world values. So there's nothing radical about it. Just standing on constitutional rights that are guaranteed to all people, regardless of where people were born. And regardless, frankly, just so people know, the rights under the Constitution in our country are guaranteed to all people, regardless of their immigration status. Mm-hmm. All people are equal. So it's important. But if we forget, lose sight of it and aren't willing to sacrifice and put ourselves at risk or even just blood, sweat, and tears to do it, then those rights will go away.
Yes.
Yeah. And that actually brings me to your point about it not being a radical concept. What have other cities done along these lines? Like, when looking at the ordinance and also looking at the outreach effort, were there other examples to look to? There's a lot of hysteria from the right around this concept of sanctuary cities. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of misinformation about what that even means and whether affording a protection like this against this illegal overreach puts us in that category. Do either of you want to speak to that? Other places, what we're looking at?
So, yeah, the most immediate place that we looked at was King County had a very similar ordinance. And they also, parts of King County are less than 100 nautical air miles from the Canadian border. So we looked at their law. That was helpful. The ACLU identified some different places. I'm thinking we looked at Las Cruces, New Mexico as well. So, we had some examples, and what we really focused on was our rights as a property holder, which, again, it doesn't get any more American than that. So that's really what our rights, and to be free from government interference. People on the right and the left can agree that big government interfering with individuals' lives and property can be problematic. So it wasn't so political, I think, when you really look at true politics. But the whole thing about sanctuary city is that's a label that's used generally in a negative sense, but they sweep everything into it. So I myself define sanctuary city as a city that says we will actually act to protect people and prevent the federal government from coming into our city and following the law, the federal law, whether we like, whether you like it or not. That's so I see it as a very proactive thing. I don't see this as sanctuary city behavior. We're not telling Border Patrol that they can't enforce the law. We're simply saying you don't have permission to go into a private area. And that's everyone has that same right of privacy. So we're saying we're exercising our same rights, constitutional rights. So that's not. And then we also have some laws in Spokane that says our police are not going to ask people their immigration status. Our city employees aren't. We're not going to convey immigration status. Again, we're not interfering. We're just not helping. And the reason we're not helping is that's a federal law, not a local law. Our police have their hands full in solving crime here. And frankly, people who are not documented are much more likely to be victims of crime. And if they're afraid to come to the police, that makes their position even more tenuous. So our police told us, please don't make us cooperate with federal Border Patrol people, because we want to be able to protect children who are being trafficked, women who are being trafficked, people who are being assaulted, people who are having their wages or property stolen. Society will work better if we can enforce those laws without worrying about federal law. So to me, a sanctuary city is one that tries to prevent actively federal Border Patrol or ICE enforcement, whereas simply not cooperating is not cooperating, and we're not under any obligation to cooperate for the most part.
If you're just joining us toward the end of the hour here, you're listening to Praxis. I'm talking with organizer Jennifer Mesa and City Councilperson Brian Beggs about Spokane's kind of sweeping effort to address the issue of illegal search going on and arrest at our intermodal center just down the road. So I guess from both of you, you talked about what's next in terms of court challenge, but what would be a next, like, broader vision for just making Spokane a more welcoming and safe place for immigrant populations in general?
Well, definitely address the issue of the intermodal center. We want public transportation to be safe and free for everyone, regardless of your immigration status. And looking broader, it's for us is really looking outside of the intermodal station, because we know that there are arrests and there's immigration raids that occur here within the city of Spokane, and we really want to keep our families safe so they know that they can access the same resources, whether that be medical or police, or in case of emergency. Because if we have our vulnerable community living in fear, they're most likely not going to report other incidents, and that affects us all, whether it's going to seek medical care or calling 911 for an emergency. We know that the Border Patrol has hired 30 more agents to be present within Spokane County, and we've seen an increase at the intermodal center and also within our community. We've had reports of even Border Patrol showing up to schools to read to students, and perhaps that could be a nice way for students to learn about other employment and jobs. And, you know, I don't think they always do it with bad intention. However, it's not considering other populations that could be frightened or living in fear. So, we also want to address Spokane Valley, because we know that there's a lot of collaboration between Spokane Valley and ICE agents. So there's a lot of work to do here within Spokane County.
Yeah, so I have probably three things to say. One, I really agree that one of the huge problems is they have signed 30 new agents here, and of course they have to justify themselves, even though we're not a border community.
And the actual border, the Canadian border, is actually understaffed, according to their own reports.
Yeah, no, that's a huge problem. They're cutting back hours for people to go across the border because they don't have enough agents there. So that it's even an economic development thing for our state. Is those agents need to go to the border where you use them, and you want to keep your borders orderly. You know, that's fine. I don't think anyone really contests that. So they really need to be reassigned, but that's beyond our control. I think City of Spokane has their laws pretty well set. including, you know, not only did we talk about we're not going to share information voluntarily with Border Patrol and ICE about people. We'll leave that to the federal government. But we also created protected status for people who consider themselves refugees. And I think we may be one of the first cities in the country that have done that, just like race or gender or disability, refugee status, which essentially means you personally believe that your life or your family's life is in danger if you're at a country and you flee it. But the way we wrote it is the person fleeing gets to decide whether they feel like they're in danger. They don't have to get a certificate. Mm. And we expanded that protection to all employers and all landlords in the city, and as well as services. So we've granted those legal rights to people. We still need to get some staff hired to enforce those rights. We've funded it in the budget, but they haven't. The positions haven't been created yet or funded. Those are all, you know, again, somewhat practical, legalistic kind of steps. The bigger issue to me here in this community and throughout the country is we have to get over trying to paint people who come to this country in the corner of being other and different and wrong and something, you know, less than human. And that's really what's so disturbing about the current political conversation out there, that someone who simply their visa is now expired has become an evil person or likely to kill somebody. You know, people come here every year on a visa. It gets expired. Sure, they should keep track of their paperwork, but sometimes our driver's licenses get expired, different things. But they haven't fundamentally changed as people. And so this idea that we're just going to marginalize people that way and be afraid of them, instead of recognizing the contributions that they bring to us. I mean, people come to this country because we want them. They have a place here for the most part, or they're seeking refuge for their lives. And we've been a beacon for centuries for people like that. And we've put people to work, and they've completely enlivened our culture. That's the big work, is to get out of the us and them languaging and situation and judge people by how they act, not by whether their driver's license is up to date or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I realize I have one other legal-ish question about the ordinance. I don't want to get too into the weeds on it, but I'm interested in the law of it. What is stopping Greyhound, the company? They're a private company also, right? And they therefore have the right to enforce whatever they want, basically, within the law. Has Greyhound been approached across the country or here about refusing access to their passengers?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. So before we passed the ordinance, we sent a letter to Greyhound and said, will you just keep them off your bus? And they wrote back and said, we're within the 100-mile. We feel like we don't really have a choice, but will you please pass an ordinance that will restrict them from coming in? Then that'll help us. Mm-hmm. And so we wrote it up and then we sent it back to them and said, do you like this? And so they endorsed it. They said, thank you for doing that. That will help us. Their bus union of the drivers, they wrote a letter saying they're against it. But essentially,
They're against the ordinance or they're against the practice?
They're against the practice. Okay. The bus drivers are against the practice. But essentially, as I understand it from them, is when Border Patrol comes with firearms onto their bus, you know, their drivers aren't going to get in the way. They can do the same thing that the city does, which is says, we don't consent. We're not agreeing. But they can do it. Now, they could take legal action, offensive legal action, if they wanted to, file their own lawsuit. So nothing's stopping them from that. And that would be great. But that's a choice, you know, they have to make. But they definitely, at a fundamental level, they have the right to withhold consent for them coming onto the bus, but whether and the right they could file a lawsuit. But so far they haven't. And I, you know, there's some reasons, you know, this current administration is all about retaliation. And so I could see why they say, well, we have shareholders money. We're not going to do that. That's why it's going to take someone with, as I said earlier, less to lose with a good lawyer to probably get us where we need to be.
Or a critical mass of people saying, I'm not going to ride Greyhound until this stops also. But it's a lot of people without a lot of economic choice making the choice to take the bus. Mm-hmm. So
another important thing to note is that there's other bus agencies that come in and out of the intermodal station. Yep. So it's not only Greyhound. Several immigration organizations have been reaching out to the local union of bus drivers to try to see how we can collaborate with them to keep passengers safe.
Has that been a good response so far, or is it just still
from the unions? I think that they don't want to be interacting with ICE agents. They want their bus workers to do their job and to complete their times and shifts, and they don't want them to have to act as enforcers or collaborators with Border Patrol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the end of the day, I imagine the drivers just want all the people to get to their destination safely because that's their job.
Yes.
It's probably something they enjoy fulfilling for folks. Mm-hmm. So what do we know about this escalation? It looks like, I'm just following a couple local activists' posts and like people who are going and keeping an eye on the center itself. It looks like almost every night, almost every day or night since this has been enforced, they've been there.
Yeah, we've seen an increase in Border Patrol presence, and we've had several arrests there this week.
Yeah.
Just this past week.
Yeah. Is there reason to believe that that's like specifically retaliatory or like...
I couldn't answer that. However, I think that also one is the ordinance. So it's a pushback from the ordinance. And then also we have the holidays approaching. So there's a lot more people that are going to be traveling in and out of the area to visit family, to, have some extended vacation. And they're going to, unfortunately, they may run into ICE agents there or Border Patrol agents.
Jeez. So, I just keep going back to what you were saying about this being a family issue. I mean, having to make the decision, do you want to go home for the holidays or not?
Yes, exactly.
Based on this policy.
Yes. And I would advocate for people not to ride the bus at this moment, specifically if they don't have full citizenship status. I think they're at risk. Or if they do travel, then to bring all of their documentation so they can be prepared in case they are questioned by Border Patrol. And also for other riders to just remain silent because that's their right. They don't have to collaborate with Border Patrol agents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just thinking about this, I don't know if this is a discussion that's happened at all or if it's something I just thought of, but in terms of thinking about like direct action, like things we can do, ways we can help each other, is there any talk of like trying to help set up like carpool, caravan, like alternatives, like through the informal network of just like so-and-so needs a ride from Yakima to Seattle?
That would be great. I haven't seen any discussions of that within the groups, but that is a great idea.
Just to kind of say, let's...
We could start the discussion.
Yeah, let's start it right now. Yeah, let's pool some cash. That's something people could do if they want to support. And here's the gas fund. And
yeah, right now I think that the main focus that we should all put our efforts on is to share the information of the people's rights and share the information of, when Know Your Rights workshop is going to occur in our community and invite people to come out. It's not only directed towards our vulnerable population, but everybody should participate these sessions so they can be informed of what their rights are when traveling on a bus or in a car or if they are questioned about their immigration status.
Mm-hmm.
And once they know that, they can also help others when they... if they see somebody else that may be struggling with their language or something with a Border Patrol agent.
Mm-hmm. And is one of those coming up in the near future? A Know Your Rights training?
Yes, we just completed two this weekend, and we will have another Know Your Rights workshops in early December.
Okay, awesome. And where can people go if they want to participate, if they're looking for that information?
So the same organizations will advertise it in their throughout social media with their email contacts. So I would say get in touch with ACLU, the Center for Justice, Planned Parenthood, and RAIS, or Hispanic Business Association, or with Greater Spokane Progress, or also with the group we're developing, Latinos in Spokane, we advertise some of those workshops.
Cool. Mm-hmm. And I guess what I always try to leave things on a like hopeful note, because we're talking about pretty grim things on this show most of the time. What in this whole process, in this fight, has given you the most like inspiration to keep going, or the most hope for this fight?
So I would say the Spokane community. We saw how many people actually cared and have been paying attention to this issue, how many community members went to testify before council. And that was one of the few times that I've seen the council chambers completely filled. It was beautiful to see how many groups that I don't necessarily interact with, like the WSU Medical School, how they came out to say this is a health issue. This can impact our community's health. There were psychologists there that also mentioned the same thing. It's a mental health issue. And the amazing groups that have come together to draw attention to this issue, it's great. Just seeing that, seeing the community's response is very different than what we see on social media or across all media, which could be really polarized. When we have these discussions one-on-one with your average community member, they want Spokane to be safe and they want their neighbors to be safe. So that's always very inspiring.
Yeah, good. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for
having joining me on the air. Brianne had to take off to get to the city council meeting, mm-hmm. I imagine, which is in an hour. So, yeah, if you're just joining us at the end, I've been talking with Jennifer Mesa, who's been organizing the Know Your Rights effort through the ACLU of Washington and with other groups, and organizes Latinos in Spokane, which is a group but soon to be an organization. And if you missed any part of the show and would like to hear it, you can find the podcast either at kyrs.org, or you can go directly to the feed at soundcloud.com/praxisradio, PRAXISRADIO. If you have questions for me about the show, ideas for future topics, etc., you can always email me at praxis, PRAXIS, at kyrs.org. I will be back next week, and thanks for listening.